Hey everyone, welcome to another episode. Today I'm joined by Ross Capocci, an LPC in Berkeley, Pennsylvania, who's here to share about his story of building a practice. Hey Ross, welcome.
Hello, how are you, Kelly?
Good. I was so struck by the name of your practice, Mr. Ross Counseling. Can you tell me a little bit about where that came from?
Mr. Rogers is one of my heroes, and people have told me they're like, you're kind of like Mr. Rogers in a way. And the other part too is people have been calling me Mr. Ross for a long time, even adults. So when I was, younger, so I kind of ran with it. I'm like, yeah, this fits. This has the kind of personality that I want.
That's fun. Well, let's start at the very beginning about why private practice. Why did you go into it?
Yeah, so I got an offer. I was working at a drug and alcohol facility, and I got an offer for group practice, and I was kind of intrigued by it because I wanted to work in mental health. But I think a lot of it really came down to knowing my value and learning like I was worth more than what I was being paid, and it wasn't lining up at a certain point. I didn't feel like I was being paid fairly in that way, and so I decided to make that jump. And then I was in group practice for a little while, started learning the ropes of how that worked. We were in the midst of COVID at the time, and a lot of my practice with them was mostly telehealth. And I'm like, well, I'm basically doing this on my own. One of the main reasons I went into group practice was for the camaraderie. I want to really learn from others, and I wasn't getting that to the extent that I thought. And so I talked to a colleague, and they're like, don't look at your paycheck, don't look at what that amount is that they're taking from you. And so I did. And what I noticed was I could have rented 4 or 5 office spaces for that 40% that was being taken. And so at that point, I'm like, you know what? I know enough of what I need to do to start up my own practice. I have other colleagues in the field who I could reach out to. And so I decided that I would want to start my own practice at that point.
Yeah, I think you bring up something that's very, very common. So if you're a group practice owner, please listen up. But a lot of people, why did they leave group practice is because they see that they could do it themselves. I think the reason why some people don't is because they don't have any interest in running the business side and that they understand that a portion of that is going to taxes for the business. The portion of that is going to maybe supervision or other things that are offered. So as a group practice owner, if you're wanting to keep clinicians in your practice, there needs to be something that they're getting in return other than just showing up into an office, because otherwise then they could just rent an office themselves. So if you are a therapist that's currently in a group practice, really pay attention to if you're at a contract rate, if you're an employee. And a lot of times, contractors are being treated as employees and not as contractors. And if you're a contractor, you're already a business owner. So it's really important to know what the value is, the exchange there. So I love that you saw, like, oh, I'm not really getting any other value other than a place to do my work, which I could do anywhere else as well. So when you made the leap, how did you do that?
Well, first off, I talked to a lot of people, in a short period of time because my mind was already made up, but I had covered my bases, right? Prayed about it, talked to my family, reached out to a really important colleague and mentor, a former supervisor of mine, talked to my own counselor about it. And so first it was talking to everybody and getting on the same page. And then it was tackling the to-do list. And I kind of had a to-do list in my mind, and it was one by one. And at one point, I mean, I put together the business in about 2 weeks, and I do not recommend that for anybody. Like, take your time with it if you really want to take it seriously. But I had a whiteboard that I had like a th I wrote down 3 columns worth of to-do list items, and it was things like get an EHR together and start up your documents, establish an LLC, get a tax ID. And it was all those logistical things. And really, it was chipping away at that list. That was the first step.
Cool. From there, I mean, what has been some of the hurdles that you have faced in your practice building journey?
Yeah, so I guess a few of them. One of them would be sometimes getting referrals. Sometimes there is more preference for a female therapist than a young male therapist seems to be like the lower demographic of who a client is looking for. And I don't like to talk about that a whole lot because I know that could be sort of targeted. Like, okay, so you're finally facing prejudice in some area, but it's like from
Well,
that.
I mean, prejudice is where there's oppression. This is not oppression. This is just more about the makeup of a field, right? Of like, I'd be kind of curious actually, because I think there is a need as for different genders, different age groups, and things like that. So, but for you, you've encountered some issues around that.
Yes, absolutely. But you're right, because I do get niche phone calls sometimes from concerned mothers about their young son who needs a good mentor. And so, like, it works for me in that respect. But it is a little discouraging when I look on the pages and they're like, okay, this client is looking for a referral for a female therapist. I'm like, I'm already out. And, but I understand too. I understand where a lot of that comes from. That'd be the first struggle, I'd say, or hurdle. Some of it is like figuring out what to do in terms of trainings and what actually works. So I'm a certified brain spotting therapist, and I love brain spotting, but it's kind of hard to get clients who want brain spotting specifically. And then even sometimes when I do get those clients, they end up liking talk therapy more than they do the brain spotting. So it's like I spend all this time and money learning how to do brain spotting, and I rarely use it. So it's also kind of figuring out like where do I put my time and money for the continuing ed in a way that is actually going to be beneficial to my clients, is something that is going to resonate with them as much as it's going to resonate with me. So that's like a little hurdle, but I'd say that that's something too that I've kind of had to work through and figure out, and still I'm kind of at that stage again, like wanting to learn more and wanting to pick up something else that could be beneficial to them and something that I care about too.
When you think about like your niche and how you want to stand out, where do you find the empowerment in that?
I find the empowerment in, I guess part of it is like my own adaptability or flexibility because I've had to bounce around with niches since I started. Like at first, with my education, there really wasn't a niche. So it's like, okay, person-centered is what I know. That's what I focus on. And then I end up in the drug and alcohol world. And so that became my niche. I left there. OCD became really important. That sort of became a niche. Some Christian-based, faith-focused therapy. I've worked a lot with people with ADHD. That's kind of a recent, population I've worked with more. So I think it's kind of adapting my own adaptability. It's kind of exciting because then I could work with a new population and take them on and help them. Whereas, maybe I didn't know a whole lot about that population a year or two prior.
And you recently came out with a book, Becoming Mr. Ross. What inspired you to write a book?
Well, at first, and I mean, this sounds almost superficial in comparison to where it ended up, but it was something for me to do when I had like cancellations or no shows because I was getting a little frustrated about that early on. That was an early hurdle with group practice. And so I'm like, okay, what's something productive I could do during my time? And it's like, well, I like writing. And I wanted to kind of capture some of the information that I left from my wellness group that I did back in one of the drug and alcohol facilities. I really wanted to bring out some of that info. And so I started building up the book. And before I realized that, I knew that I wanted to do something more anecdotal than research-based. I didn't want to release simply another wellness book out there that didn't feel like it resonated with me. And then I kind of like, I guess my interest in journaling might have fueled this, where I'm like, all right, well, how do I put together my story and then attach counseling insights into it? So it was kind of like speaking to younger therapists in a way, but then it became more of this memoir that now I think if someone were to pick up my book, they could put their story on top of mine and look at these key milestones and points, ask themselves questions and validate their experiences, which I think is far more special than what it started with.
You mentioned how it is a part of it. You explore how you navigated your own mental health as a therapist. What has that been like navigating your own mental health as you build a private practice?
I think it's given me more sense of purpose in my job because when I was building up my practice, I was going through a lot. Like there was a lot of personal and mental health issues that were going on for me, not so much that it impeded my ability to do my job. That would have been the ethical time to step away. For me, it was almost an escape from my own problems to work with people. And it gave me the sense of, the way that I depended on my own counselor. I kind of want my clients to be able to depend on me in that way and to help them in the way that I was being helped. And so I think as I've learned more about my own mental health along the way, it's actually helped me to learn new techniques and new ways of thinking. And then it's almost kind of ironic because sometimes it'll be even in the same week, a client will come to me with a similar issue, and all of a sudden I'm sharing with them what I've learned. It's this idea that if I work on myself and help myself in ways and grow, I'm going to be able to help my clients in some way too.
One of my therapists, I think she's probably like in her 70s, and she told me you only have to stay about a step ahead, sometimes half a step, and it could be only the next day that the client brings something to you that you just experienced the day before. I mean, I don't like to think of things in terms of steps per se, because life is a little bit more, it's not so linear, but there is something about knowing ourselves and knowing our shadows makes us safer for our clients, and our understanding of our own inner world is an asset to that therapeutic attunement, I think, in a lot of ways. So as you've been navigating this, what is your practice now growing into?
It's a good question because it's almost like I can't necessarily have an agenda for it. As much as I've tried to be like, yes, brain spying is the thing, I'll get people coming to me that it's about other issues and then I have to adapt. So really it's more about, and I know it sounds overly simplistic when it's like we want to have like a business plan or business model with our practices, but really it's showing up for the people who show up today. You know, like if they're showing up in a certain way or they need help with a certain thing, it's kind of going with it and taking what I can from those stories and helping people with theirs. Because I do like that idea of you might be a step or two ahead of them. And I think I wrote something to that effect in the book, actually, you know. So I resonate with that whole idea. I think for us therapists, like we don't know what we might be able to bring to somebody or what our issues and how we deal with them actually then maybe help out someone else or what we might gain from a session. So I think it's being open and present with that day-to-day, I guess those opportunities that come up in our work.
Yeah, I think that's kind of why during COVID there was a lot of burnout because we weren't a step ahead. We were in it with our clients, we were in the trauma. And even today, with what's going on in the world, many therapists are in co they're co-experiencing the trauma with their client. And that makes it, oh, that's just heavier work and will lead to more burnout, and why we need more space to heal and take care of ourselves and when doing this work, because I think it's becoming more and more common that we're not so a step ahead of our clients. But I want to kind of circle back to what you were saying about like starting the practice and some of the hurdles. If there was one piece of advice you could give to someone who's starting their practice, what would it be?
It's not as scary as you think it is. That's maybe the biggest feedback I've heard from therapists who aspire to have their own practice. I also taught in the fall of last year at my alma mater, and I was working with graduate students there, and they were talking about starting their own practice, and some of them were in their first or second year, so it was pretty impressive that their minds were already there. but they were kind of overwhelmed by all the stuff. And even therapists who have been in the field for a while who I've talked to, they are overwhelmed with it. And really, it comes down to a pile of checklists. Like it really is. And once you find one or two therapists who are willing to help you have a friend or colleague, it really is not that bad. It may feel like, oh, billing's gonna take so long, but like my EHR, it takes me like one click to do my billing. Like it really is not nearly as difficult as people say it is. Yes, it's a responsibility, of course, but then again, when you look at the responsibility that you have as an employee or an independent contractor with a group practice, well, you're making a whole lot less and you're doing basically the same work and you're as liable, you know? So it's like you're carrying almost the same risk in a way. It really is not this big step that people think it is.
Yeah, if you are a contractor, you're definitely carrying the same risk because you are your own business contracting with another business. If you're an employee, you shouldn't, you either position, you shouldn't be doing any of your marketing, you shouldn't be doing any client acquisition ads or any of that kind of stuff. The company should be providing the work for you. But I think that there is something about really breaking things down into a way that works for your brain, whether you're neurotypical, neurodivergent, whatever. You may need a little different kind of shift in how you approach the checklists and things like that, you know? So kind of honoring, and that if you, I just want to say that if you do feel overwhelmed, it's kind of normal. It's like, it's part of
Absolutely.
it. And it's sort of trust, coming back to self-trust and trusting yourself, that if you don't know what to do, that you know who to go to get support from. I love the idea of getting support from colleagues, just making sure it's the right colleagues, the colleagues that you do want to emulate, who are like, sometimes we ask advice from people who look successful, but they may not be, you know, like really getting great information in solid places for you. I think coming back to trusting yourself that you can do this. And I mean, we've helped thousands of people do it. I know it's possible. And I also know that really paying attention to those overwhelmed spots can give you clues as to when maybe you should do it differently than other people do it, because your brain works different or your circumstances are different, right? So we don't want to create cookie cutters. It's really about creating something that aligns with the heart and soul of who we are and how we show up in the world. Well, do you want to share a little bit about your book and where people could purchase it?
Yes, of course. So the book is Becoming Mr. Ross, a story of growth, connection, and healing. It can be purchased on Amazon, either paperback or Kindle copies. You can also check out my website, www.mrrosscreations.com, or my Facebook page and Instagram.
That's fun. I love that.
Yeah.
Ross, thanks for being here and for sharing your story. And I love the confidence that you have now, how you've grown into like, wait a second, I can do this, and how you've done that for yourself. So I hope that those that are listening are inspired. Check out Mr. Ross, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, Kelly.